take a deep breath, take the higher road. That's what they always say, as if they know the way. They won't take it from me. But don't ever doubt yourself, it's life ain't just a dream. You make your own, so kick and scream. The people move alike with a never-ending force. You never had the chance, so what you waiting for? The day has come, my friend, cause this is war.
Welcome to Nurse News Analysis with the Nurses on Nurses Out Loud Talk Radio. Today I have with me a return nurse that gives us some wonderful insight, Nurse David Wayne, and a special guest, Melissa, who has actually been on my show before telling her story about her best-selling book that was sadly inspired by the passing of her mother and what she witnessed within the medical community and what contributed to her mother's suffering. And we talked at length about what went on there. And then she would later end up having to go through the suffering of her father passing away as well, and the medical community failing yet again. But her book is in the America Out Loud bookstore called Not in Vain, A Promise Kept. So as you hear her talk today, be sure to check out her book in the bookstore. Thanks for joining me, both of you. Thanks for coming on. And we're going to talk about some news today. So we're going to be looking at some headlines in the news that pertain to healthcare. For those who are unaware in our audience and do not realize that there was a mass exodus of medical professionals when the mandates of 2021 descended upon the medical population, we're here to tell you it's a massive problem even today in 2024. You and your neighbors may want to believe that all medical professionals believe that vaccines are the best thing since sliced bread, and that any vaccine that the CDC comes up with must be made of pure water from the cleanest springs of the world. But the fact is, that is just not true. The medical professionals who pride themselves on being educated about any product that gets injected into their body did the research. They were digging into the CDC and FDA websites and were surprised to discover there is a very evasive, non-specific language found there that leads you through multiple pages of no answers. Medical professionals know there's always package inserts on all the medications, and many who looked were surprised to discover that the package inserts on the vaccines were blank. And then ask yourself, how informed can your pharmacist be if the package insert is left intentionally blank? This contributed to a lot of medical professionals choosing not to get the COVID-19 vaccines, and that includes Nurse David and myself, who are here with you today. And we know what happened to those that were non-compliant with the mandates, and they were told to comply or be fired. And Nurse David was one of those nurses in Wisconsin, and many others left the profession, and others were in fact fired and escorted out of their hospitals, and they were considered a threat to the medical community. That exodus of the masses of medical professionals left a massive nursing shortage all over this country, and nobody's really talking about it. But the effects of the shortage are making their way into the news, and that's what we're going to talk about today. Mount Sinai in New York, where Melissa is from, the healthcare system there, which she can tell us about how prestigious of a system we're talking about here, was fined for understaffing nurses and is going to be paying $2 million, which isn't really a lot overall. And this is the eighth time that arbitrators have ruled against Mount Sinai Health System for understaffing, and they've been ordered to pay. So what do you two think about that? I guess I may start with Melissa weighing in on telling us a little bit about some history about this system, like how prestigious this system is, how well it's known for quality care.
Yeah, Mount Sinai in New York City is a staple. It's one of the largest groups in the city. It is also has offices up in, you know, the suburbs and, you know, Westchester County. My nephew spent a couple weeks there. They have a lot of specialists in that facility. But like almost every hospital in the city, right now, they are having significant problems with nurse shortages. And I've seen a lot of this in the news. And you're right. This is the eighth time that the arbitrators have sided with the nurses. And when you look at the areas that are getting hit, I mean, you don't want any area to be short-staffed, but when you see it's like, second or third time oncology's been hit, the emergency room, I forgot what the third one was. Maybe it was med-surg, I'm not quite sure, but either way, like no unit you want to have to be understaffed. But when you think of like the ED and oncology, those are where you need really specialized nursing care. And that's a huge problem because, forgetting the money, forgetting and all of that, it's all going to trickle down to negative patient outcomes, and that's exactly what's happening. I hear, like in my world, I hear stories every single day about bad outcomes, people reaching out to me, what should I do? My mom is here, my dad is here. Every single day I'm like digging in and trying to help people on, what I would do if this were my parent or my husband or whatever. And it is everywhere. It's very scary. Anybody I speak to, I say, do yourself a favor and, try and stay healthy and out of hospitals, because it's, even with my experience this summer, it's just not safe.
Yeah. And David, when you were going through the pandemic as well, what happened was a shocking blow when your hospital made people get out of the hospital who did not have their vaccine, but they brought in other people who happened to not have their vaccine as well. And the staffing was phenomenal. You even mentioned, I remember on your show, that the people who were in charge of laundry, that the laundry services were not even getting done. People couldn't even get clean sheets and things like that. So I'll let you weigh in on that.
Yeah, that's right. And we were trying to get coverage in the local media about it, and that turned into a very surprising experience because staff from the hospital were bringing photos and bringing videos and bringing bedside patient experience to the media and telling them about how what they were showing on TV and writing in the newspaper was not accurate. And we didn't get anywhere. We ended up basically having to, we started our own website and we took out billboards directing the local community to the website. And we spent a lot of time thinking about what the message on that billboard would be. The language we chose was stop a staffing crisis and vaccine mandates. Our worst predictions came true, and the hospital leadership knew that it was going in that direction. That was one of the most frustrating things. We had the CEO of my hospital on video telling the leaders of units around the hospital that they were going to move forward with the vaccine mandate. He understood that they were very worried about staffing after the mandate, but it was the right thing to do, even if it resulted in reduced services to the community. And that's exactly what happened. The headlines said that only about 1% of staff were fired. And that's what it said for pretty much every hospital in this area of the country that covered is they said only 1% of staff were terminated due to a vaccine mandate. And although that was technically true, what they weren't saying was how many staff left before being terminated. It was an enormous amount. And we ended up having to do absolutely unprecedented diversions where we were directing ambulances to go to other cities. We were just it was catastrophic. We reclassified heart valve replacement surgeries as optional surgeries, as elective surgeries, and canceled them. My mom, who has multiple instances of having melanomas removed, she called in to schedule an appointment, which they're supposed to get you in within a couple months. The waiting list for that was 18 months for something that you're definitely not supposed to wait that long to get checked out. So,
Oh,
but.
unbelievable. Yeah, that is what people are not realizing. I mean, Melissa, before we even had a 2020 pandemic hit us, your mother's situation had predated that. by several years. And even though it had nothing to do with the vaccine mandate, you know, there have been nursing shortages for decades. It's a profession that is, even though, David, I think we found out you are part of maybe 10% of the nursing population. Men are 10% maybe of the nursing population.
Yeah, right around there.
Yeah, we are predominantly dominated by women who do have babies and leave the profession intermittently to leave. So there's always been a nursing shortage from time to time. And obviously it's a burnout, a job that has high burnout. But and so there's a lot of reasons for there to be nursing shortages, but that's not the only problem. And when you're having contract people being brought in, it's not saying that contract people aren't skilled people. There's a lot of skill represented by contracting nurses, but they're not familiar perhaps with the hospital, the system, the way that things are run, maybe the doctors. Did you have much to do with contract nurses within the psychiatric ward that you worked in, David?
Not here, but I did once I started doing travel nursing. And when I was a staff nurse, I took on a lot of different responsibilities, like being a charge nurse. And I was also chair of our safety committee. And so I spent a lot of time reading literature and putting a lot of effort into making sure that my staff there were safe. And the number one factor for being safe on a psychiatric unit is staffing. You need enough staff, and you need them to be experienced. And the vaccine mandates completely eroded both those factors for a lot of hospitals throughout the country.
Today, I was in physical therapy, and my therapist was letting me know that because Nurse Michelle broke her hip back in October, and they said, "Oh, we're going to have a problem with getting everybody packed in over the next 2 months because we're having a staffing problem." And I said, "Oh, really? What's that problem?" And they can't get people to fill their positions. And I said, "Well, you do know that your hospital system is still mandating the COVID-19 vaccine for their employees." And they did not know that because they had already complied 2 years ago. And that's why they're still sticking around. So the people who got it, you know, aren't batting an eye about questioning what the problem is. They don't realize there's a problem that other people aren't wanting to come in and comply right now. And their staffing is being affected right now. So continuous care, I mean, we're talking about people who, like myself, who need continuous physical therapy when you are going through a recovery from a trauma, from a hip injury. And your entire continuity of care is going to be broke if you're having staffing issues. Melissa, when you were going through it with your mother and father, I'm not sure that staffing was so much the focus. It was more of sometimes quality of care, right? That was happening. Well,
with my dad, I'm glad you brought it up. You know, it was December 2022 and he was on a cardiac unit, and I noticed he was admitted twice over a 3 week period. And I noticed a couple things. You know, to me, when you look at a cardiac unit, the patient population to me is you're going to see probably, you know, some overweight people or older people, you know, diabetics, elderly, frail people. And, you know, I saw a bunch of young people, and I did ask a male nurse, you know, I said, you know, I got to ask you, because I talked to everybody and I said, you know, there's this population does not look like the normal cardiac patient. And I said, I know HIPAA and stuff. You don't got to tell me, but how many of these people are here for myocarditis? And he's like, quite a few. And I said, he said, they're trying to force me to get a third booster and I'm not going to get it. And this is a nurse told me this. And, you know, I did find there was a lot of, I guess, traveling nurses. They did not work for the actual group. And that was problematic because, again, in talking to them, and, you know, when my loved one's in the hospital, I'm there morning till night until I have to leave. They make me leave because I have trust issues. And, you know, again, if in my experience, if you're, you know, you're on a cardiac unit on Monday and you're on oncology on Tuesday and you're on med surge on Wednesday, like every floor has different idiosyncrasies. Every floor has different areas of expertise that you need. And again, and not to be disrespectful, but how good are you at your job? I just had a person, a family friend, call me from another state, and their dad was in really bad shape. And he should have been in an oncology unit, but he was not. He was in med surge. Long story short, he had liver cancer and full of fluid. And I said, listen, first thing you got to do, take a picture on the board, buddy. I said, find, you need to take a picture. Who's in charge? Who's on the case? This, that, and the other thing. He sent me a picture of the board. There's no names on it. Not a name. He asked people for their IDs. Nobody's given up IDs. I said, listen, it's a Friday. You have got to make sure they put in orders for paracentesis to get that fluid off your parent, because I don't want to scare you, but it can suffocate him. And he asked one of the resident doctors. It was a teaching hospital, and they didn't even know what paracentesis is. I said, oh my God. I said, listen, I said, you either gotta move them. You gotta rattle some cages, because this is going on 2 weeks, and this is not good.
Yeah, Melissa brings up a very important point that we're on Nurses Out Loud. We're trying to make sure the audience is very aware that there used to be potentially a presumptive thinking that my loved one's in the hospital, the nurses and doctors are caring for them, they're in good hands because they're in this excellent quality teaching hospital or whatever they're in. We are not in that day anymore, people. It is literally up to you to advocate for yourself and for your loved one. And Remnant Nursing, that Kimberly Overton is the founder of, is making sure we all understand that if you have a vulnerable person that's in the hospital, it's very likely you should be reaching out to Remnant Nursing, securing yourself a personal nurse person that's going to be there with your loved one by their bedside throughout their care, so that somebody with medical knowledge is going to do it for you. And Melissa, you could probably, and David, if you want to weigh in on that, you can too. But that Melissa knows, because she advocates for patients on a regular basis, how very difficult it is. Like you just said, the person didn't even know that terminology about what, how necessary it was. So to not have the medical knowledge as a loved one isn't enough to just, love them. I mean, sometimes we can just be feisty enough and fight. If you have a feisty enough fighting loved one who even doesn't have medical knowledge, they can still advocate great for their loved one, because they're like, I just know something's very wrong and I need help, right? Mm-hmm. But we need people that have the medical answers nearby that say, why is your staff not doing XYZ? Do you want to say something about that, Melissa?
Yeah, no, I actually, they were going to have a meeting of the minds with all the case managers, and I gave them a script and I sent them a Word doc, and I said, you can even conference me in, because I was that nervous. And unfortunately, I didn't want this to be right about this, but it was too late. I mean, yes, was it a bad cancer? Sure. Could it have had a different outcome? Possibly. When they finally got around to putting their heads together, it was palliative care. And 2 days later, it was, gone. And so again, I me personally, I would have been pacing the halls, but again, it's just some people, like, and that's what I try and tell everybody, like, you have to take an active role in your own care. You have to be proactive. And I know it's not in everybody to do that, but if you can't do it, like you're saying, if there's services out there, ask for help, because my God, like, nurses aren't doing it intentionally, but you truly have to speak up or be there for your person, because it's really scary. Like, even me, like, I'm feisty as hell. And what happened to me in July, I was telling him, I was crying, I was throwing up, I was saying something's wrong, and no, you're fine, you're getting discharged. And then I turned septic.
Did you have an advocate for yourself, even though you're an advocate?
No, and no. But I did not, and I was down in the city, and I, it was same day surgery. It was supposed to be in and out, and they wound up keeping me overnight. And again, I woke up and they had no nurse in recovery, because they didn't have anybody there. They had no doctor. And so I, after the meds were off from the surgery, from a hernia surgery, I started having significant pain, and I have a high pain threshold, but I knew something was wrong, and they would not listen to me. And I told them, they kept trying to throw me Percocet. I can't take Percocet. And then finally they listened when the LPN came in and took my blood pressure, and it was 50 over 30, and she couldn't raise it. And then I was a full code, and I took a rocket ride to surgical ICU.
Yeah.
Then they listened.
Yeah, this is the crazy stuff that goes in. I mean, just having to have to be an emergency patient myself in October of 2023, I found out how quick that this patient advocate needed one herself. It was not enough to be one. I mean, I had to fight for myself. Thank goodness my medical condition was my hip. I was temporarily impaired with a little bit of narcotic when they first took me out of the hospital, but that did not keep the white coats from coming in my room and attempting to bully me into wearing a mask. So no doubt, the need for an advocate at the bedside that, like you said, you're feisty. Most advocates do tend to be feisty. I want to remind the audience that patient advocates in the hospital are working for the benefit of the hospital. Now, David, you were in the psych area, and you have inpatient psychiatric patients, and having had a loved one that's had to be in that situation before, how would you want to tell the audience would be the best way to advocate for the inpatient psychiatric patient? From the outside, if they have to do it from the outside, how can they help be best advocates, or who had the best outcomes, who maybe had the advocates?
It's really hard. As nurses, the mantra in nursing school is that you're a nurse, you're a patient advocate. It's something that's really drilled into you. And when I became a nurse and did it for a while, I really became quite disturbed by how many people, when it really got hard, didn't live by that mantra, and that wasn't their nursing practice. For us on the psych unit, this is the one area of the hospital where a lot of the patients are there against their will, and they're literally behind double locked doors, and there's security there, things like that. And it is disturbing to see how easily patient rights can go out the window, even if you have a public defender, something like that. From the outside looking in, it's like, oh, well, this person was assessed by a psychiatrist and they have a lawyer assigned to them by the state because they couldn't afford one. All right. In a lot of cases, that person maybe had 10 minutes to prepare for their case, and all of a sudden, the lawyer and the patient are in front of a judge, and a psychiatrist is weighing in on the situation. And advocacy is there's a it's problematic. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I have 13 letters from patient advocates from this one facility. 13 different letters. After my dad passed, I got 5 letters from different advocates within the same hospital for the same letter that I initially wrote. And one of them called me and I said to her, I said, listen, I know you're just the messenger, but I know you are not in the position to make change. I know that you are just the messenger. I know you are on the same payroll as the people that I need to get to. So, no disrespect, I appreciate your letter, but I have 13 of them and I need to speak to someone that can make decisions. And that's just the way I pushed it. But one thing, Michelle, that I just want to not forget, you brought up your colleague that is having that nursing people at the bedside. The morning that my blood pressure dropped out, and I texted my husband. My sister-in-law is a maternity nurse in the Bronx, and she raced over because she just got scared. And I really didn't realize the severity of it. So she says, "What room are you in?" And I was in surgical ICU. I didn't even think she could come in. And soon as I know, she's upstairs. And she and I'm this is something I could not have done. And it was a male nurse. He was very nice. Now they were very nervous. The surgical team was seeing me every 4 hours. But she came in and she's like, okay, what's going on with this? What antibiotics is she on? How come these haven't started been how come these haven't been hung? How come she doesn't have a PCA? What's going on with the urinalysis? Like she was at like bing, 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 bing. She got like antibiotics started. She got me the PCA, like the Jeopardy pain button, because I couldn't move, all within an hour of being there, literally an hour of being there.
That
And I
is
was like
a,
so grateful because I mean, I was in no condition. Like I was really sick and she got everything done. And then she stayed there the whole day. And I'm like, you don't have to stay because I was NPO for like 6 days and it was miserable, but she came and spent the entire day and they would have let her slept there, but I made her go home. I'm like, thank you, I'm good,
Yeah, you're making a beautiful point. David, did you have a point you wanted to make on that?
Yeah, just that one of the absolute worst crimes that happened over the course of COVID was how they wouldn't allow friends or family to visit people in the hospital. And you had all these patients who were there on their own, and they didn't have friends or family there to advocate for them or watch out for them. That resulted in an incredible amount of harm throughout the country.
Absolutely. My neighbor was one of them.
Yeah, so when you don't have, everybody doesn't have that person. I mean, if you don't, even a person that just loves you to death, if they can't be put beside the bedside, even if they have no medical history at all, that a person who loves you well is going to fight for you well. But a person, but there's a terrible story, you know, that we referenced on the news before, and that is the first Black nurse. I don't know if she was the first congressional, first woman in Congress as a Black woman, or as a the first nurse to Congress. One of the ones that she made history with died at the hands of nurse neglect. So it's a case that's going on, and here she was, this historic person, and she's a nurse, but the hospital made sure that the staff had to have staffing meetings during their business hours so they wouldn't have to pay them to come back in on off hours. And the loved one was at the bedside. They actually had a loved one beside the bedside. That person went out recognizing there was a need for medical intervention and could not find any medical staff, and found just one, probably just a nurse assistant, who that nurse assistant said there were that they were all in a staff meeting, and that nurse passed away from complications from that. She had had spinal surgery, and contamination of the site had happened, and nobody was there to cleanse it, and she died because of that contamination. So it's ner it was nurse neglect. We'll see how it pans out in the court system, because the court, the hospital staff may say, we didn't have a choice. We were made to go to these meetings. So it's like, who do you blame? These systems that are getting paid so much money. And when we come back after the break, we'll pick back up where we left, but we're going to have to go to cut for an intermission for our sponsors. And don't forget to check out our online store at americaoutloud.shop, where you'll find all the awesome products available at a discount, including the sponsor for Nurses Out Loud, which is ASEA. Be sure to check out the Renew 28 Revitalizing Redox Gel. Everyone needs to have this in their medicine cabinet so you can manage pain, rashes, and so many other common ailments without medication. Plus, the gel can be added to your skin care, even for your face, for a smoother and more toned-looking skin. The Nurses Out Loud crowd have been enjoying the ASEA Renew Event Skin Care. It's called Renew Advanced Skincare line, and you can give your skin the boost it deserves with a skincare system powered by redox cell signaling molecules, which are native to your body. Be sure you also have the redox liquid supplement at a minimum. Drink 2 ounces in the morning and in the evening, and you can also fill an atomizer up and mist your face as an added level of skincare. Use promo code OUTLOUD to save 15% off your purchase. I'll catch you on the other side of the break.
It's time, and this is
ASEA believes that inside each of us is the potential to feel our very best. Our redox-based products tap into reserves within you to power your personal well-being. Make our breakthrough products an essential step in fulfilling your greatest potential. ASEA, we power potential. For exclusive savings, use code OUTLOUD to save 15% off your first order today.
Cholesterol, blood pressure, blood sugar, inflammation, and weight. These are all real-world problems that 87% of Americans are struggling with. Often, there are no symptoms, but left unattended, we become inundated with one health problem after another. It's time to fight back with HealRight. HealRight is a bar that you eat, but it's food as medicine that addresses the nutritional root cause of health issues in just 8 weeks. Developed by world-renowned scientists and backed by 15 years of research, HealRight is effective, but it's also delicious and works without additional diet or lifestyle changes. Step out of the statistics and use food as medicine. Visit healright.com/outloud or americaoutloud.shop and use the code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
58 million people suffer from joint aches and stiffness in the U.S. every day. Ignoring chronic joint discomfort can affect mobility and your quality of life. Advanced Nutrition Company, Healthy Cell, created joint health and mobility to support connective tissue, joint lubrication, and reduce joint irritation with curcumin, omega-3, chondroitin, glucosamine, and hyaluronic acid for joint comfort and flexible range of motion. And Healthy Cell's not a pill. It's a patent-pending gel you swallow with clinically proven ultra-absorption of science-backed ingredients. You would need to take 11 pills to get the same amount of nutrients in each gel pack. And these great-tasting gels come in a small packet. Tear off the top, shoot it down, or mix it in water. It's 100% drug-free joint support. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. HealthyCell.com, code OUTLOUD for 25% off.
Expert opinions, honest debate, and in-depth investigations are what you've come to expect from AmericaOutloud.news. We don't shy away from speaking the truth boldly and plainly. All that's missing is the propaganda that has infected legacy and social media. Get the best of down and dirty, wholesome American speak. Now is our time, my fellow Americans. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Welcome back to Nurses Out Loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio. I'm your host, Nurse Michelle. Wherever you're listening from today and whatever you're doing, I thank you for giving me the gift of your time. Be sure to make AmericaOutloud.news your daily stop for all the latest news and happenings. We all must do our part to share the stories, the articles, and the podcasts and videos so we can help secure America's future. Be sure that your neighbors are not hearing about it from this perspective, the news of what's happening around their community. From this perspective, they need you to share podcast links because you may be the only one sharing a new perspective for them to hear. We have to help wake up the people. Where I want to pick up after the break now is where we had left off, and we were talking about advocacy within the hospital. And I wanted to remind people, in case you hadn't heard it, that when Nurse Michelle was in emergency surgery in October, I knew that sometimes when you go into a supposedly safe surgery and everything's supposed to go easy peasy and you hope to come out with no complications, it doesn't always go that way. And you may come out the unconscious person with an adverse thing that happened to you, and you cannot speak for yourself. And trust me, someone like me does not like to think that I'm not going to be able to advocate for myself. So that's a very disturbing thing. So I made sure I had in writing before I went into surgery that if anything happened to me, that a medical decision had to be made, that three people had to be consulted, and they all three had to agree. One of them was somebody I knew loved me to death. One of them was somebody that I knew the law thought had all authority. And one is someone that I knew had a major medical knowledge about decision making. And that was Nurse Jody, for the record. And I knew Nurse Jody would fight for the death. And she would make sure that if anything was going wrong with me, that she would bring that knowledge to the people involved in the decision making process so that all three could decide on something. So do not think that I'm being extreme when I say that. When you need somebody to advocate for you, it is probably that you're unconscious or unable to advocate and it's too late. So do not go into a situation unprepared. Get yourself a power of attorney on in writing. Go ahead and laminate it, put it inside your wallet so that if you're unconscious from a wreck, it's already on you. Now, David, I wanted you to get a chance to say a thing or two about the Mount Sinai situation, because so many people think, oh, understaffing is something that's gone on forever. It's always a regular problem, nothing new. But that's really not the case, David, is it?
No, it's not. I mean, we've seen kind of a healthcare staffing crisis on the horizon for a long time, but there are things we can do that make it better. There are things that we can do that make it worse. So thinking back to 2 years ago, Can't believe it's been 2 years already, but we were at the height of kind of a COVID vaccine mandate madness. We were being told it's a pandemic of the unvaccinated, and we were seeing this bizarre politicization of a respiratory virus. And we saw different states behaving in wildly different ways. So we had states like California, where they were forbidding people from being on the beach. We had states like New York that were incredibly heavy-handed with their vaccine mandates, not just for healthcare workers, but I mean, they were basically, you couldn't participate in society in New York if you weren't vaccinated. You couldn't go to venues, you couldn't go to restaurants, that sort of thing. And there were other states like Florida where they took a different approach, where Governor DeSantis down in Florida said that nope, we are not doing vaccine mandates for healthcare workers in Florida. And what have we seen in the time since then? We have seen a massive exodus of white-collar workers from states like California, from states like New York, to free states like Texas, to states like Tennessee, and to states like Florida. So when I heard about this Mount Sinai news story, out of curiosity, because I've been doing travel nursing since I was terminated for being unvaccinated, I logged into some of my agencies and I looked for contracts. So I looked in the state of New York for psychiatric travel nurse contracts, and there were 188 of them. Down in Florida, there were zero. So that right there speaks to how they're policy positions by people in leadership at the state level, and at the federal level, and at the hospital level have affected staffing in their regions of the country. The places where they've been incredibly heavy-handed, where they've been very authoritarian, they have a staffing crisis. And it's a situation of their own making, and it's the bed they have to sleep in now.
Oh, yeah, that is a big expose to see that. Anyone out there listening who's even in travel nursing, you should be able to find the same information. And you should ask yourself, even if you're one of the people out there that got the vaccine because your travel agency maybe even made you do it, or the cities and states that you went into made you do it. It should matter to you that there isn't a problem in places that did not do what cities like New York did. That's quite a reveal. It's shocking to me. Also in news about what's going down is nursing schools in Maine. That it's this is coming out of Portland, Maine. It says nursing schools fast track training to combat shortage, 12-month program, a win-win. Now, for those who don't know this, but Michelle had my broken hip in the state of Maine. It's an absolutely beautiful state, but it is a highly vaccinated state. And for those who don't know it, the governor of Maine actually broke Title VII law during COVID. And if you were a business owner and you had an employee who wanted an exemption, a religious exemption or accommodation from getting the vaccine, if you gave that employee a accommodation, you would the governor would effectively remove your business license from you. So that is an executive of a state acting as a federal executive, as if she has authority to do that. And I believe it is Liberty Counsel, who I had interviewed just before going to Maine, who is planning on taking down that governor for what she did in that case. And I think she's one of four states that did the same thing, four executives of states that did that. Now, this nursing school fast tracking for David and I, who are nurses here, Melissa is a psychologist. We know that it's 2 years of extreme rigor. And we have all this preemptive science that we have to do before we even get to do our nursing school rigor. And it is rigorous and quite a bit of torture to go through 2 years. But according to Maine, they say America needs nurses. And some schools are implementing accelerated programs to train them. To shorten the process, these programs cut training time from up to 4 years down to one. So here we are talking about quality of care already going down, and we already have a problem with the present system putting out nursing students who really, as my daughter said, she's a recent graduate, it really isn't fully prepared for the real world out there. And they got to learn a lot on the cuff as soon as they get on the job training. And now we're going to take it down to 1 year. What do you think about that, David?
Yeah, a one-year nursing program is not win-win. It is lose-lose for patients and for those nurses. That is so unfair to those nurses. They are not going to be prepared, and it's going to manifest itself at the patient bedside. It is an act of desperation. It reminds me of what's going on at my former hospital, where prior to COVID, there was this steady push to require all associate degree nurses to upgrade their degree to bachelor degrees. And as soon as COVID and the staffing crisis came along, that policy went straight out the window. So yeah, they're lowering standards. That's not good for the people who are left in healthcare. It's part of why so many people are leaving healthcare. They're leaving in record numbers. They're retiring. They're completely switching careers. And a lot of them are a lot happier and a lot better off, because it's a disaster out there right now. It is an awful time to be in the hospital, and it should not be that way in the richest country in the world. It is astounding that we spend so much more on healthcare than all these other countries in the world who have way longer life expectancies than us.
Yeah, this goes on to tell us that prospective students must have a previous bachelor's degree and need to complete 8 prerequisite courses. This is dramatically shorter than the typical 2 to 4 year program. So if you already have a bachelor degree, you've got yourself fast paced into a nursing degree, a second bachelor degree. And it looks like that's what they're offering, is a bachelor degree in nursing, when you have associate degree nurses that are out there practicing for decades with tons of experience, and somebody's going to come in with what looks like a higher degree. And I learned through this entire pandemic, I'm sure you did as well, David, and Melissa, I'm sure you observed it as well. When it was the most vicious and the people were coming after me for trying to educate people to make an informed decision about the vaccine, it would be the nurses that had about 6 different letters behind their name that had so much credentialing that were the most horrible, threatening people that all they really had was profanity for me and name calling for me. And I would literally say, okay, I've got about 10 questions for you about vaccines. And if you can tell me you know the answers to these, maybe you'll get some credibility with me. And none of them were able to answer it. And because they could not answer 10 basic questions about just vaccines in general, all it would do is ignite them into a flame of fire of cussing and profanity. And I'm literally like, is this literally the best you have to come to the table with, is to just threaten to come after my license and call me names? I'm literally giving you medical data that you should be proud to exalt over me with all your extra letters. And you don't have it. You don't have the knowledge.
No. This is a little different perspective, but in 2021, my son was getting exercise-induced chest pain. He does sports and mixed martial arts. And at the time in the dojo, he had to wear a mask. And of course, at school, he had to wear a mask, which was I didn't agree with. And, you know, eventually we got out of that whole situation. But I took him to, because when he was little, they thought he had a problem with his heart. Thankfully, he didn't have a problem with his heart. I brought him to one of the best pediatric cardiologists in New York City. And I was there because he was 12. He just turned 12. So guys, that's the key number, guys, for vaccination, for chest pain. And the first words that came out of her mouth was, get a vaccine. And I said, what didn't you hear of why I'm here? And I'm like, don't you want to do an echo? Or like, what are we doing here? So thankfully I got the echo. Echo was clear. Then she said, okay, go to a pediatric pulmonologist. Same thing, like you're saying, the more letters after the name. These are prestigious, top 5 in the city to bring him to. Brought him to the pediatric pulmonologist. Same thing. She actually got nasty with me, and my son was like embarrassed, but I was like, "What? Why would I put my son at risk to get something bad happens on an experiment just because you think that he should have it? And I'm presenting with chest pain. All right, get out of here. You know, and I never went back to them, but it actually got between us. Like my son, like he was like crawling into the corner because it got nasty. I was like, what part aren't you hearing? You know, like, I'm here for your help, not to be gaslit. And he's still not vaccinated. And he's not going to ever get vaccinated.
Yeah. David, you were going to add as well. I'm astounded every time I hear stories like this, that somehow the word vaccine is the miracle answer to a problem that has absolutely nothing to do with an immune system problem that he's there for. So it's just baffling that we're in this this kind of level of problem. The University of New England is slated to begin in May these classes. So we're talking fast track, like they need it so bad. They've gotten colleges already ready to jump on board. And I'm telling you, you need to reach out to Nurses Out Loud if you need a list of colleges, and you need to go to nocollegemandates.com if you're thinking about sending your kids off to nursing school programs. Do not send your kids to nursing school programs who have this kind of mindset. You need to send it to the schools that already showed during 2020 and 2021 that they are pro autonomy of the patient, pro patient advocacy, and pro informed consent. And those colleges do exist. There were only about 150 out there, but you can find them. Let your kids go there. It is worth it to send them to the schools that honored the Constitution during this last pandemic.
It's really quite remarkable that so many colleges still have vaccine mandates in this country. For example, I was looking recently at who's recommending COVID boosters still around the world. And so in the US right now, the recommended age for getting a COVID booster is 5 years old. In Switzerland, 65. Germany, 60. Norway, 65. Singapore, 60. Australia, 65. France, it's 80. If you're 79 years old in France, sorry, Grandma, you're just a little bit too young to for us to recommend a COVID booster for you. But here in the U.S., we're giving it to our college students. Sweden, 65. Denmark, 50. UK, 65. Japan, 65. Those are the ages at which they recommend COVID vaccine boosters. And here we're doing it at 5 years old. We're making our students do it to go to college. We're making our healthcare workers do it. And what we're doing is we're filtering out the people who are the real critical thinkers. We're filtering out the good patient advocates. We're filtering out the people who stand up to authority. It's not a good time to be in a hospital in the U.S.
No.
We also did it to our military. We got rid of over 9,000 active duty Marine soldiers and Navy and airmen. And if you think about it, if you were kind of going against the system, if you're in the military, you always listen to what they say to do. So it's exactly what you said. They got rid of the critical thinkers, the people that question authority with some kind of moral compass. So, I mean, that's,
and then
they offered them, okay, now we're in trouble because we're not making our numbers. So, you know, you can come back. We'll get rid of the separation, other than honorable. Come join us.
Yeah, absolutely. And who are the authorities in healthcare in this country? Pharma companies who behave in psychopathic ways and are predatory and always prioritize profits over outcomes. That's who controls our major publications in healthcare. It's who controls healthcare education. It's who writes the textbooks. It's who funds the conferences, funds our politicians.
It's
just so crooked from top to bottom.
It's just disturbing to hear you even list that out. Talking here about these nursing students and the fact that we are even mandating all kinds of college students across the country to do it. Some of you out there have heard about the Lakin Riley murder that happened in Athens, Georgia. I happen to be a resident out there. That's in my neck of the woods. And here in Athens, this is a girl who was a nursing student at the nursing school that I fought so hard for in the fall to not have to have the COVID-19 vaccine. This is a young lady who is friends with the ladies that came to me that needed the help to make sure they didn't have that COVID-19 vaccine. I was fighting for people like Lakin Riley to not have to get a COVID-19 vaccine to be in their nursing program. And sadly, that school these girls successfully were able to get the right to not have to pick a medical procedure against their conscience 2 months later, after they're already secured into the program, the school came to them and said, well, you know, you didn't get your COVID-19 vaccine. And yeah, you got your religious exemption for that, but you cannot have a religious exemption for a flu vaccine. It will not be accepted. And they bullied them so much. The girls were so much into that program by that point. You know, before they started the program, it was whether or not they were going to jump that program and go over to another refugee nursing school that was willing to take them in, where my daughter had graduated from. But this school said, okay, we'll accept your religious accommodation. They get them in the program. And then 2 months later, do the same exact bullying attempt. And sadly, both these girls ended up getting that flu vaccine anyways, thinking, oh, it's probably not as bad as the COVID vaccine, having no idea how many Guillain-Barré and severe reactions people have had from that useless vaccine. So that was just disturbing to me. But for those who don't know about the Lake and Riley story, it does revolve around the border crisis story, which is a big deal. But apparently the city of Athens, Georgia, had declared itself a sanctuary city. And the person who did murder her was it was a violent rape and murder. We don't know all the details yet, but in broad daylight, on the college campus. And this particular story is still unfolding, but he was already arrested multiple times. He had been let go, Melissa, up in New York. And because of some kind of details that did not get finished, and they just let him go back on the street. So he should never have ever been out in Georgia to be even able to get this innocent girl. But now a nurse has been removed from the potential career pool. A young lady's life has been taken, and all because of our country allowing these people to roam freely in our country.
To bring it back to New York City, you know who's not required to be vaccinated to go to public school in New York City? Illegal immigrants. They're going to school without being required to be vaccinated, while if you are a taxpaying citizen and you're actually here legally, guess what? Your kids have to be vaccinated to go to public school in New York, because that's the clown world we live in these days.
Unbelievable. Melissa?
I was going to say, the other thing that's correlated with the border that a lot of people aren't talking about, it's definitely not in the news, but I just happened to a friend of mine last week, was I suggested they're in a smaller hospital. They needed to be in a bigger hospital, better hospital, more specialized hospital in another state. But guess what? They couldn't get their transfer. You know why? Because it was full of illegals in the ER, and they had no capacity for beds. So that's on a personal level. This person was not able to be transferred to a specialized hospital in another state because it's full of illegal immigrants. And not that you want to say, well, they don't deserve care either, but this person wound up dying in a rinky-dink hospital because they could not get transferred. So it's, and that's exactly what's happening in New York. New York is full of the same thing. Like, I'm supposed to go to a follow-up appointment this week, and I don't even want to go. Like, I'd rather, to be honest with you, do it on the phone. I don't even want to, I don't even want to go down there. And I'm used to work in Manhattan. I used to work downtown. I used to take the subway all the time. It's another place right now.
Yeah, I won't be able to tell today the whole story. I'll probably do it on another news show, but I just had to make a police report while I was at Hilton Head Island, because I was followed while I decided to walk the beach by myself at sunset. Mm-hmm. And I'd never actually done that before. And I was followed by what looked like four men that did resemble either South American descent or Middle Eastern descent. And I was 100% alone, didn't have a gun Glock on me at the time. And I had to go up to three total stranger women and say, hey, can I walk with you? Do you notice I'm being followed? And these men actually followed us all the way out. They surrounded us, and it ended up being a situation that had to involve the police. So I feel like the world is changing. I don't want my kids out in certain areas because of this going on. And obviously with what just happened with Lake and Riley, it's a huge wake-up call for my own community. But going back to New York, Andrew Cuomo subpoenaed by Congressional Subcommittee Investigating COVID-Era Handling of Nursing Homes. So that is in the news. The ex-governor was at one point hailed for his leadership during the pandemic, but here we are now under a congressional subcommittee. Melissa, what do you know about that?
Yeah, I know that. I mean, my gosh, over 15,000 nursing home patients died, both in New York and New Jersey and Westchester, up where I live. Janice Dean is one of the champions of this subpoena. Both her in-laws passed away because of his executive order. The new governor, Hochul, was her whole shtick when he had to step down was she was going to come clean with everything. She continued to cover it up. I hope that he's held accountable, because I still remember watching him say, you know, the whole what difference does it make if they died in a hospital? I think it was something like 28 in a nursing home, 32 in a hospital. Who cares? That's exactly what he said. You know who cares? The families care, you know, and how disgusting of you to say that.
Do I remember correctly? Didn't Andrew Cuomo, wasn't the issue that he made it impossible for nursing homes to decline COVID positive patients?
Absolutely. That's exactly what he did.
And led to outbreaks in the exact patient populations that they knew were at highest risk. Isn't that what happened?
Yes, that's exactly. And the other thing too, as you know, is nursing homes are not generally staffed with RNs. So I know my neighbor is a nurse in a nursing home down the road, and it was terrible for her. I mean, the death rate was just horrible, and she's got like PTSD from it. You know, they don't have the capacity. They don't have the expertise. They don't have the equipment. They're not the kind of place where you need to take care, especially an elderly compromised person. And he threw them all out back into those communities, and they all died. And to add insult to injury, the loved ones couldn't even bury him. You know, they had to sit in freezers. I mean, how do you not hold somebody accountable for that?
Yeah,
you know, that's why they get paid the big bucks.
I remember all of that when it was going down, and we were not allowed to really share that content. But I remember there was the rescue ship that came in to New York because they were saying how bad it was.
Mm-hmm. And he wouldn't use it. No. He had the need. He built a place, remote place at Jacob Javits Center. And Trump sent the ship up here. He hated Trump. He didn't want to he didn't want to act like he helped him in any way. So he rejected it. They could have put patients on those ships, and they would have had Navy nurses and doctors take care of them, and good care of them. But he rejected it because it was a political act.
Yeah, that needs to be brought out for sure. Mm-hmm. David.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, this goes back to all these other pharma scandals too, where we see these people take these very specific actions and they're never held accountable. You know, like the leadership at Vioxx, like the leadership at Pfizer, like the leadership at Glaxo, like the leadership at Merck. They've killed hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of Americans, and we have emails and meeting minutes from them where they talk about hiding side effects and overstating efficacy and doing that sort of thing. And nobody's ever held accountable. We need politicians. We need executives from companies like this. We need them to go to prison before we see systemic change with these systems.
Saying, this is not a time for amnesty. This is a time for justice. And justice must occur for the sake of the next generation. Anybody listening, if anything you know that has not been told, you need to write to nurses@americaoutloud.com so that we can hear the story, because it is not a time for amnesty. No. It is people that we love suffered unnecessarily, and we need to expose it. We need those stories to get out here. We do not move forward from this. Justice. It is time for justice.
It's time and